Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. I am Todd Albaugh. It is Wednesday, the 25th of January, 2023. Glad to have you back on the program today. If it's Wednesday, it's Meet the Press. No, if it's Wednesday, it's Crossover Wednesday with Pat Kreitlow and Up North
News. There you go.
As we go to Lake Wissota, beautiful Lake Wissota down here in Madison, Wisconsin, at the world headquarters. A little bit of snow in the air. A little slickery on the roads. How is it up there?
Same here. Just some very light snow falling today. And again, our 110th day of overcast skies, it feels like. And the snow in this case is just very light because it is that leading edge of an Arctic front that is going to drop us all into the deep freeze over the weekend. I feel like we've been very, very almost blessed, if you will, the past few weeks to not have any of that below zero garbage. But I fear we are heading back that way quickly by the end of the week.
In one of my Mutt resume, I once served as the general manager for a Tilted Kilt restaurant, basically a high-end Hooters.
Did you really?
I really did. No, I'm seriously. Isn't that great?
And now, wait a minute. I want to explore this more. Hang on just a second. I'm sure you had a valid point to make, but I think mine's going to be better.
Right. Well,
now,
well, go ahead.
I didn't expect any of the guys at Hooters to wear half T-shirts. But at a place called the Tilted Kilt, did the guys have to wear kilts too?
Yes. They were a little bit longer than the girls. They were a black, more almost knee-length kilt. Right. And then, but the girls, of course, were like a short miniskirt, basically. The food was fantastic. But it was one of those gigs between, you know, as you know, and as our next guest, Trigby, knows, when you're in politics, when your boss or your party is in power, you got a job, and whether or not you're not, you got to do other stuff. And so my friend John Call back at Richland Center, long story, but he had come upon the ownership of this, and he said, this is my entire interview to manage a Tilted Kilt restaurant, 65 people. He said, you don't know a GD thing about running a restaurant, but I can teach you that. What I can't teach you is honesty and loyalty. I know I got that. Do you want the job or not? I said, sure. He goes, great. Congratulations. That was it. That was
your manager.
That was the entire interview. But anyway, I had to go to Tempe, Arizona. That's where they're located at. They're headquartered. I spent about a month in Tempe, and they set a record for number of days of triple digits in Tempe, like 15 days straight of like 113 degrees. I don't care whether it's dry heat or not. It was hot.
Yeah. I mean, look, extremes are extremes, whether they're way below zero or the thing I learned, you know, we were talking last week about living in Grand Cayman, being to Costa Rica. Trigvi was in Belize. The fact of the matter is that when you're down in that area between Christmas and Easter, it is glorious. Yeah. What they don't tell you is that between Easter and Christmas, it's the exhaust vent from hell. And it's just something you have to endure, no different than really cold weather. And that's, we all like moderation in our politics and our weather.
Right. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Speaking of politics, Pat airs across the Civic Media Radio Network across the entire state from 6 a.m. until 8 a.m. So as you're getting ready in the morning, as you're driving the kids to school or to work, make sure you tune in, Pat, each and every morning, Monday through Friday. This morning, he had Sarah Godlewski on, the former U.S. Senate candidate for Democrats here in Wisconsin. And listening to her, and you had the candidate on for the state Senate seat in the 8th District. I'm sorry, her name again, I forget.
Jody Habish-Sinikin is running in the 8th District, which had been represented by Alberta Darling, a Republican, for the past 30 years before her retirement.
Here's what I realized listening to Sarah Godlewski again this morning. I voted for the wrong candidate in the primary. I voted for Mandela Barnes. Sarah Godlewski is fantastic. And I just didn't know enough about her. But I really hope she runs again because she is absolutely great.
I think that she will. I don't want to get too much into, Monday morning quarterbacking as far as that Senate race and that primary. I'm just going to look forward and say that, yeah, I think that for her as well as for Mandela, there's more to come.
State of the state last night, Pat Kreitlow, former state senator. You've been in the room during a state of the state address. Your reactions last night to Governor Tony Evers' state of the state.
That my knees feel a lot better, because when I was in the Senate, it was Jim Doyle was giving those speeches all 4 years. And when your guy or gal from your party is in the governor's chair, you stand and sit a lot with all those standing ovations, which are so unnecessary. And I always thought, boy, if I ever became governor, I would tell people, you know, don't do that. I'm just going to tell you what's going on, and let's not have the theatrics. But of course, that would never happen. So there were many applause lines, and there were many lines where you couldn't imagine, if you're in the minority party or the majority, you know, the non-governor party rather, why would you sit still for that? I mean, there's just some things that should be bipartisan in terms of showing support, but we've got to the point now where, my goodness, even clapping in light applause for somebody from the other party is seen as a sin. And I mean, we've got to get over that.
I've been watching State of the Union addresses since middle school. That's how much of a nerd I am. And I don't know if I've missed more than a couple since then. Been watching State of the State addresses since Tommy Thompson, or maybe Lee Sherman Dreyfus was governor. I have never not seen the opposition party stand for either the First Lady of the United States or the First Lady of the State of Wisconsin. I thought it was appalling. The Republicans couldn't even stand when the First Lady was announced last night.
No, and again, that's just a poison in our culture, and I'm very thankful that people from both sides are willing to call that out a little bit more and say we can be better than this, and I'm glad to have your voice, Trigvi's and others, saying that we can be better. We have to work a little harder to be nicer, but it's possible. It really is. Let's just try that.
You heard it here first. Pat Kreitlow for governor coming up. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe, you never know. Pat Kreitlow is the host of Up North News every Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 8. Thanks, Pat. We appreciate you. See you next week.
You bet. Thanks.
Our pleasure. Stay tuned. We have the one and only Trigvi Olsen from the Lincoln Project up next on the Todd Allball Show.
Beer's good, and people are crazy.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. 15 minutes now past the hour, 8 o'clock. You're listening to us on WRCE in Richland Center, WXCO in Wausau, and WXCE in Amory, and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app, on Twitter, on Facebook, and I believe on YouTube or sometime. We're everywhere. And we're glad to have you along. Glad to have our second guest of the day, as per usual, on a Wednesday from the Lincoln Project. Joining us today, I believe, for our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., Trigvi Olsen, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Trigvi, you are back in the U.S. You made it back safe and sound from Belize.
Barely. I had to go running through the Houston airport. My flight out of Belize was delayed a couple hours.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. Glad you got a little sun.
I'm glad I made it back. I went with my wife and daughters to see cats. And when you have daughters who are teenagers, you know, cats is...
Like you went down to adopt a cat, or to like the musical cats?
No, the musical cats.
Okay. I didn't know.
And to make it back for the musical cats. Because, no, you know, I'm not a cat guy. I'm a dog guy.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that 100%. Politics, lots going on. I guess maybe let's start where we kind of left off with Pat Kreitlow on this State of the State address last night. A couple of things policy-wise. You know, and God love the governor. I've met him a few times when he was superintendent of public instruction here in Wisconsin. Just a great, good guy. Whether you agree with his politics or not, the guy is earnest. The guy is honest as the day is long, and he loves Wisconsin. But whoever is, and not that I'm God's gift to the world of speechwriters, but I've done a few of these in my past, and whoever is writing his speeches, I mean, the person, I'm sure they put all their heart into it, but he needs someone who knows how to write these things and gives him lines to make him at least sound a little better. And I don't get people that don't get good speech writing, but that's just me. I mean, honestly,
being governor of the state of Wisconsin, you get up to give these speeches, you know, and Tommy Thompson proved this, and Doyle did to an extent too. You just got to get up there and be a cheerleader, right?
Exactly. Like
Tommy used to, you know, where Eagles soar and Packers score. Isn't it great to be from Wisconsin? It's probably a little bit more like, good, isn't it great to be from Wisconsin?
Very good.
I hope Tommy isn't, if he is listening to your show, I'll be hearing about it, I'm sure. But the impersonation. But seriously, like, that's, you know, I think there's a, you know, Evers, the guy, you're right. He loves Wisconsin. Right. He's the guy you'd want as your neighbor.
Exactly.
And I assume his wife is too, which is why, you know, the idea that you wouldn't stand up for the office of the First Lady of Wisconsin is the part, whether you agree with her, like her, dislike her, whatever, is just.
It's appalling.
Outrageous.
I mean, for those who might not have heard the last segment, so last night, the State of the State, as Trigby knows, these things are filled with pomp and circumstance. I am a pomp and circumstance guy. I love the State of the State addresses. I love the State of the Union addresses. I love everything about them. I love the kind of the good-natured ribbing back and forth. You know, I love all the kind of the fake applause. I'm like Kreitlow. I actually love all the kind of the cheerleading. I think the pomp and circumstance is great. I think it's great for the country and for tradition. But when last night, when the governor introduced his wife, the First Lady of the State of Wisconsin, up in the balcony, Robin Voss and the other Republicans on the dais politely clapped but did not give her a standing ovation. And from the Republicans that I could see on camera in the room, none of them stood up, which in all my years, I can't remember that happening either at the federal or state level.
Yeah. I was shocked when you and Pat said that. Really was. And honestly, it violates, like, I'll quote my dad here, who was kind of a salty Wisconsin guy. It violates his first rule, which is don't be a dick, right? Like, right, that's exactly what they were being.
Exactly.
Like, it just, and it isn't who we're supposed to be, right?
Right.
Like, it just isn't as a state, as people.
Let's talk a little bit about policy, and this might be getting a little bit in the weeds, but the big thing that I took away from the governor's speech last night from policy, number one, he borrowed Bill Clinton's phrase, not literally, but basically, it's the economy, stupid. And he talked a lot about, you know, $550 million investment for the healthcare workforce, $30 million in tax relief to expand child credits, $340 million for child care, and more money from a lot, and also for mental health in the state of Wisconsin. So number one, I was impressed, and also for small business grants, bounce back grants in Wisconsin, another $300 million. So number one, I was impressed that he spends so much time on the economy and jobs in Wisconsin and workforce. And number two, it would have been really easy for a Democratic governor with a record number of mass shootings in this country right now to get up there and give a speech about we need more gun control. He took the opposite approach, which the Republicans are always harping about, mental health, and talking about putting all this money into mental health. So from that standpoint, I thought it was a pretty savvy speech.
Yeah, I mean, that the reality is he's maybe doing a little bit more of what you should do. If you're the Democrat governor of the state of Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania or any of these states, they're sort of purple states. The way you govern is the way that Tommy Thompson or John Engler did, right? Like, you start building coalitions across, you stand firm on your principles and you build coalitions where you can and start attracting people in the middle. And, the best model last cycle that we saw nationally was Gretchen Whitmer. You know, she took the legislature back in sort of the same way Engler and Thompson did back in the day in Wisconsin and Michigan. Sounds like Evers is getting that message from a policy standpoint, right? Like, that's smart. You don't want to lead with gun control in the state of Wisconsin. This is not the way to win. But having an honest conversation about, you know, who gets guns in their hands, and making sure that people are taken care of. That's good policy. And it conforms with, you know, sort of some of the foundational core values that he carries as a Democrat, a moderate Democrat. So I think that's smart.
Another thing he did not talk about last night, never mentioned legalization of marijuana, either medical or recreational, which is something that many in the Democratic base have been kind of hoping for and plugging away. And looked at polls that show that it's a plus in Wisconsin. Most voters approve some form of legalization of marijuana. But again, he didn't talk about that last night. And he only had one line about defending a woman's right to choose on abortion. So again, he kind of took those hot button issues off the table so that Republicans couldn't use that against him in the postmortem. But what they did harp about, Robin Voss, and I'm not sure, Trink, have you ever seen this? Usually there's a proper response from the opposition party, where in Wisconsin they would go in the assembly parlor, mm-hmm. they sit down and do that, or in Washington it's done various ways. There was, for the Republicans, it was this weird, it was announced that Voss was going to, Speaker Voss was going to give the Republican response, but he just went up kind of on the side of the dais and had a press gaggle. It wasn't like a formal – it was weird. So we couldn't even carry it because we'd have been anticipating like a formal response, and he just kind of answered a few questions up the front of the room. And what he harped on was that Tony Evers was spending all this money on job creation, you know, on $50 million for Main Street bounce back grants, $100 million for workforce innovation program. These are things that Tommy Thompson or Scott Walker could have put out there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I wonder how much of that is, you know, Robin a little bit like, and in the interest of full disclosure, I've known Robin since high school and I like Robin. But the reality is, I think he's a little bit, he's not Kevin McCarthy, but he's a little bit in the same spot that Kevin McCarthy's in, which is his caucus is completely unmanageable. And if he goes out there and tries to give a response to Evers, he's going to end up having bigger problems than he already has, which are pretty substantial. So, you know.
We shall see. The Republicans are going to start putting their budget together, and we will see what that, of course, Howard Markline from Southwest Wisconsin, the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, we'll see what they come up with. But again, well, the rumor is that Markline and the Senate Republicans, I guess Lemahieu was kicking this around as the majority leader, basically their plan for the almost $7 billion in tax surplus in this state is to put it all into the rainy day fund. Essentially, we'll just sit on it until we have a Republican governor. I mean, that's different.
Then we'll spend it like crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And then they'll be the big spenders. So I don't know. We shall see. Let's switch to Washington. We talked last week about President Biden. There were documents, classified documents, found in his home in Wilmington, Delaware. Also, of course, at one of his offices he used after he was vice president for a while. Now it comes out yesterday that former Vice President Mike Pence, he also has classified documents at his home in Indiana after saying, of course, that he I can't see any reason why you'd have that. I can't imagine that. You know, I would take care. He did the same. Trigvi, what is up with all these classified documents?
I mean, I think we talked about this a little bit last time. I think it's twofold. One, so much stuff gets classified. And so, you know, there's all these different degrees of classified documents. The notes that the vice president might take in a meeting or that the president would take or whatever, in theory, and, you know, with another world leader, probably end up classified. So there, but, and then it goes all the way up to things like our nuclear secrets, right? So like the most classified things. I don't, you know, some of the reports on the Biden stuff seem to indicate it's more of the former, not really the latter, whereas Trump's seemed to indicate it, there was at least some of the latter stuff that's, you know, highly top secret. Right. I think, you know, I'm not surprised that they're ending up uncovering some of that stuff. They're moving out of offices and it's probably lower classified. The bigger issue is politically what this does is it creates the opportunity for whataboutism. And, you know, so, you know, Trump, where you seem to have somebody who, you know, was intentionally taking, you know, stuff that was highly classified versus inadvertently taking it and going to the National Archives and saying, hey, we accidentally took this. There is a distinction, but that distinction is going to be completely lost.
But can't you just, when I heard about this yesterday, the first thing that popped into my mind is a staffer walked into the Oval and said, Mr. President, we have reports that former President Pence also has classified documents. And can't you just see Joe just look up to the ceiling to cross himself and say, thank you, God. You got to be kidding.
Yeah, probably. You know? And can you imagine what Obama, Bush, and Dick Cheney are doing right about now?
Shredding.
Right? Like, they're actually, Cheney's probably sitting there watching the TV thinking amateurs.
Right.
The rest of them are rummaging through closets. Holy
cow.
What did I do with that phone number I wrote down when I was sitting with Chirac?
you're absolutely right. No, no, I think, yeah, you're right. Cheney is just saying amateurs is ridiculous. But to the point, though, I think politically, we've got to take a break, I guess. We'll come back and talk about politically, what does this mean for Biden? Does he catch a little bit of a break here with Pence having the documents as well? Stay with us. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio. You know what? Actually, we have a minute left. I'm sorry. I thought I had a minute. I said 1 minute. We got a minute left. So I guess leading up to that, Trigvi, real quick on the political side, a break or no for Vice President or for President Biden?
I think it is a break in the sense that it just confounds the issue more. Mm. I do think it helps. Ultimately, all of this helps Trump because it takes that issue off the table. Mm. And there's, such a big deal got made about Trump and the documents, and I think rightly so. And I do think there's distinctions, but ultimately it probably helps Trump because the truth of the matter is that issue is off the table. And that was something.
Very good. Got. Stay with us. We have more tribute also for the Lincoln Project. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. 8:33 is the time. It is a little bit crazy. Is look at some of these Republicans doing things across the country and across the state. One sane former Republican, at least like myself, is Trigvi Olson, who is the senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, a group of, I don't want to say disaffected Republicans, but Republicans that got ticked off with what was happening in the Republican Party. It just didn't represent the party. At least that was where I was at. And also, is it fair to say, Trigvi, a few Democrats, conservative Democrats, and people might just consider themselves independents who really wanted to save democracy and do what was right. Is that kind of the simplistic way to put what the Lincoln Project is?
Yeah, I mean, we're really trying to be a home for anybody that, feels concerned about where democracy is at. Joe Trippi, who ran Howard Dean's campaign, worked for Walter Mondale's campaign, was, is a legend of Democrat campaigns, is a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project too, joined us. And we've built this thing, the Union, which is at theunion.us, where people who, former Republicans, Democrats, anybody who cares about democracy, and we've got all kinds of groups from the right and the left all come together and work together on common cause. So
another project I know you just kind of launched, I'm not sure if you can say that much about it yet, but Resolute Square, which I've taken an interest in just because it involves media directly. What can you tell us about Resolute Square?
Some ways it's not different. It's similar to what you guys are trying to do, right? And it's to create content and platform that speaks to those in the center and talks about, extremism and what's happening in very honest ways. I write a weekly column for Resolute Square that's focused on democracy and what I learned around the world and some of the basic fundamentals. Stuart Stevens writes some incredible stuff. Stuart is many things. He's kind of a Renaissance man, most of all. And, he writes great stuff.
As long as you brought his name up, let's go there for a second. I've read his book. It was all a lie. I'm not sure what about you, but when I read it, it was just kind of cathartic and it made me depressed, but it also was like, he was at a much higher level than I was, but the title of the book is It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. And when you read it, it really does take you through, if you're a Republican like you and I, how some of these things that we were kind of led to believe, or I don't want to use the word brainwashed, but it was kind of like, well, no, this is the right thing. And then once you step back and take a look at it, it was like, no, it was just all a bunch of lies. I mean, the perfect example, or an example, we talked about it this week on the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which was back in the 70s when Richard Nixon was president. He had actually, I don't want to say ordered, but approved for the military to provide abortions for females in the military around the world, regardless of what their state law was. And it wasn't until Patrick J. Buchanan, yes, that Patrick J. Buchanan, who was an advisor to Nixon, basically came in and said, you know, because Catholic or Democrats were voting for Catholics because of Kennedy. And Buchanan said, you know, we got to get these Democrats away. Let's use that life line from Catholics, and let's basically militarize the abortion issue. And Nixon was really the start of this in turning abortion into a Republican issue. And when you and so it's little things like that and also it came out that the Southern Baptist Convention back in the early 70s had a line basically in their platform, I'll use that word in political parlance, that said the Southern Baptist Conference was in favor of abortion in the instance of rape, incest, or endangerment of the mother's life. Imagine that today. And so this whole the Stewart's book is just showing, exposing a lot of these lies like that. I don't know. Your thoughts on that? It's incredible.
Well, Stewart does an amazing job with that book of getting into, and granted, Stewart's shaped a little bit by growing up in Mississippi and cutting his teeth in Mississippi politics. But you also got to remember at one point, Stuart Stevens was making ads for like 75% of the U.S. the Republicans in the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. So like he's had a front row seat. You know, he says race is the original sin. I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think, you know, Republicans have gotten to a place where they just are all about the narrative and the truths and policy and everything else be damned, because it's just, you know, for a lot of them about winning. It's not about doing things. It's about being. And, you know, watching Kevin McCarthy prostitute himself to become Speaker of the House, you know, showed that to the world. But I think, yeah, Stewart's book, it was all a lie, is definitely worth a read if you want to understand the Republican Party. The other one that's out there is Tim Miller, who's from Iowa, was communications director. He's a buddy of mine, and he wrote a book, Why We Did It. And Wisconsin people might be particularly interested in Tim's book because he was communications director at the RNC when Reince was chairman. And he really gets into some of the mistakes that were made there. And it, you know, it gets to, and this is true of Stewart. I think it's true of you. I think it's true of Tim. It's true of me. You know, when I get asked to describe myself, people say, well, you're not a Republican anymore. And I say, like Ronald Reagan, the Republican Party left me. I didn't leave it. I'm still a traditional conservative, still for lower taxes, still for strong standing up to the Russians and for freedom around the world, still for less government regulation. But that isn't the Republican Party.
I agree with you 100%. That's where I'm at as well. And it's unfortunate that the party did leave those principles. To combine those two thoughts, of Stewart Stevens, he was on Twitter yesterday, the day before, with some pretty harsh comments, speaking of Kevin McCarthy and the deal that he must have cut to get the speakership, putting Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lori Boebert, and Matt Gaetz on the Intelligence Committee. And what he called it was essentially the greatest coup by Putin as far as an intelligence coup ever. And, you know, whether we can prove that or not, what do you make of this? Putting these three people on there, let's just go at it from the standpoint, in your opinion, in your experience, how much danger are our national secrets really in at this point? We talk about these classified documents in next to a Corvette in Biden's house or in a closet in Pence's house, but this is something where you have active sitting Congress people seeing real-time, current, highly classified documents. How much danger are we in?
I think the danger is less that, you know, they're going to take the secrets and hand them over and whatever else, because there's lots of processes in place to try and keep them from doing that. The fact that they're useful idiots and not serious people does Putin's bidding and Xi's bidding, and having those people on the Intelligence Committee is an assault to the intelligence of all of us, most particularly those people that are voting for Republicans. And if you say that, you know, well, I, I don't really like Kevin McCarthy, then ask yourself, why did Tom Tiffany support him or Scott Fitzgerald or any of the rest of the members? And you can say, well, Mike Gallagher's a good guy, and Mike is a good guy. But Mike Gallagher's been supporting Kevin McCarthy. You put those
goofballs
on the committee. So be asking Mike Gallagher, why are you doing this? And Mike Gallagher might say, well, I support aid to Ukraine. And you can say, yeah, but most of your party doesn't, Mike. So do you really think you belong there, right? Like, that's the assault to the intelligence of having people like that on the committee. And again, you know, we talk about what about and the straw man thing. You know, McCarthy's busy saying, oh, Swalwell and I forget the other guy, Ilhan Omar, they shouldn't be on committees. He's facing a revolt, by the way, in his own party from some over that. But those are just straw men. I mean, honestly, the only reason Ilhan Omar is getting that, and I don't agree with her on anything, and she says a lot of really stupid
stuff.
She's an assault to our intelligence, too. But he's only doing that because it's a straw man for Fox News viewers, because they know who she is. It's entertainment. It's not serious. And when you talk about things like the Intelligence Committee, they're dealing with serious issues. Like,
right.
You know.
No,
so that's the assault to our intelligence.
It is. It is absolutely. And I think it's interesting, just as from an outside perspective, watching this all take place, you have to wonder how this is going to play into the debt ceiling and how much of this is just, and for those folks that might not follow this on a regular basis, we are in a situation now where we have defaulted on the debt ceiling, and you have Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, now having to not fully pay into the retirement benefits of people like your postal workers, your postal carriers in your neighborhood. If you have anybody that works for the federal government of any level, those benefits are not being paid in fully, just to make sure the U.S. can kind of pay their bills. For according to most people, this could go on kind of creative accounting until June. But once June happens, that's when the rubber really meets the road here, and something has to be done. And so when you look at this dysfunction that's mildly entertaining, maybe kind of dangerous, as you said, useful idiots, but at some point, Kevin McCarthy is going to have to get these useful idiots together to raise the debt ceiling, or we're going to be in real trouble as far as the economy goes. And how do you see that playing out? Is it going to take the 14th Amendment, as some people say, an executive order from Biden to get this going? Is it going to take Hakeem Jeffries on the Democratic side to get his caucus together with 10 moderate Republicans? How do we get past this, Trigvi, to actually get something done? Because we can't keep going on the way we are.
It's a really good question, Todd. The adults have a real problem. And the real problem is that a bunch of unserious people, and the debt ceiling is probably the biggest example of this. For sure it is. Mm-hmm. Because raising every dollar bill talks about the full faith and credit of the United States, all debts, public and private, right? Like, the only thing a dollar bill is worth is whatever the paper is worth and the faith that people have in the United States government. And that's all about what the debt ceiling debate is about. And you can have debates on spending, but they need to be independent of the debt ceiling because they just have to. I'm sure McConnell is rolling over in his bed. Eventually, this is going to start to have real world consequences. And their theory that it doesn't matter and we can do this is going to go out the window. As it starts to really impact the economy. That's the point where they'll get serious. But the truth of the matter is, when you talk about Boebert and Gates and all these guys, all they care about is chaos. Mm-hmm. But the people who are responsible for allowing them to cause it, and this is why when I was doing my little rant about Gallagher and some of the others, they hold responsibility for not standing up and being the adults in the room. We talked about when McCarthy was speaker. If Kevin McCarthy hadn't prostituted himself to the crazy, he would have been able to go to Nancy Pelosi and say, hey, I need 30 Democrat votes, and would have governed to the center. Mm-hmm. But he refused to do that. He couldn't do that. And this is what they've made for themselves. At some point on the debt ceiling, there's going to have to be a group of them who jump on the sword. And what all the serious people back home have to do is say, you know what, my congressman, I would normally vote for the Democrat running against Gallagher, but Gallagher's going to win, and he did the right thing, and he's now going to lose all the Trump people. I'm going to vote for him, right? Like, we're going to have to start in some places transcending that partisanship, or we're doomed.
Yeah, I don't know. At what point do these guys get that we're not playing around? Because I think I look at some of these people that were elected on the Republican side, and I think they really just think this is all just a big show. It's just, you know, talk radio. It's entertainment. I don't know that. I mean, I'm being serious. I don't know if some of them actually grasp the jobs that they have, the seriousness of it, the consequences of not getting things done.
No, they're running to be pundits Republican side, and to a degree on the left too, the far left. Not so much. Democrats tend to be, but there are ones on the far left, fewer of them, who are trying to be pundits. But so many of the Republicans who are running to be pundits, not to be serious members of Congress. And then they want to end up getting Fox News contracts. Because let's face it, if you go the Sean Duffy route, did Sean Duffy ever pass anything that got passed?
I don't remember. No.
You know what? If somebody knows the answer to that, or you know Sean Duffy and you want to defend him, you know what? Find out and have him tweet at me. But I'll tell you what Sean Duffy did. He played his cards pretty well because he's got a contract to be on Fox News. That's probably $300,000-$400,000 a year contract. I know what those contracts go for because I know a bunch of people who have them. That's a pretty good gig for one night a week.
It is.
And not having done your previous job other than, you know, looking good and spouting off in a clever way.
He is a good looker. He cleans up well. He's good for TV. We're going to come back.
He's a log roller.
Exactly. We're going to come back and talk more to Trygve Olsen, Project Lincoln. After this, stay with us here on the Todd Oliveau Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Oliveau Show. It is 8:50 on a Wednesday morning, the 25th of January, 2023. If it's Wednesday, it's Trygve Olsen on the show from the Lincoln Project. Happy to have him along, as always, talking about all things politics. And we'll get his take on the NFL playoffs in a moment. But before we do that, Trygve, I just want to touch on a little bit of this 30% sales tax being introduced by Republicans. And of all the ideas out there, and all the kind of the shams trying to be sold, this one has to be pretty near the top. And for those that might not be aware, Republicans in Washington have this great idea. Let's eliminate the income tax, but charge you a 30% sales tax. And remember, that's on top of what you're already paying. So like in Dane County and Madison, 5.5%, that would be at least 35.5%. But Republicans in Washington also want to shift tax collection to the states, which means Wisconsin Department of Revenue would have to increase an awful lot. And guess who's going to pay for that? You and me in the state of Wisconsin. Trygve, what the heck is going on?
I think, you know, first of all, it's one really powerful member of the House. They've been toying around with this whole let's shift to a sales tax for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, I think about in 2008, when I was working on the McCain campaign, I guess it would have been 2007, right? Like I went down to South Carolina and these fair tax people, which is the same thing,
right,
were everywhere, right? You know, this is the part that's not, okay, we're going to get rid of the income tax. We're going to place it with a sales tax. Sales tax tends to be more progressive in that everybody, the less you make, the bigger percentage of your income it is, and you can't avoid it. You know, the richer you are, the less total percentage of your income you spend. Mm-hmm. I just think this isn't going anywhere. They realized they'd completely stepped in it. But again, this is Kevin McCarthy wanted to be Speaker of the House. He had to make promises to all kinds of people. Mm-hmm. One guy's like, I think we should have been voting on this a long time ago. Right. So this is what I'm demanding. And that's what they got. And you know, at the Lincoln Project, we whacked that right away because the lunacy of it is you know.
And it's
crazy.
It's not going anywhere because you got Joe Biden there, who's gonna veto it, and of course it's not gonna get through a Democratic controlled Senate. But just the idea that this is where Republicans are coming from, and again, as you said, this used to be a party of local control. And here you've got Washington, these guys in Washington saying, oh, we're just going to tax you in your states from the federal government. It's completely opposite of the Republican Party that you and I grew up in.
Well, here's the thing. This is the one that always slays me, right? So you get these guys, Scott Walker loves to say this. you know, Reagan taught us if you cut taxes, you increase revenue. Okay. Mm-hmm. Reagan taught us that. It's called the Laffler curve, Scott, in economics classes, at least at Eau Claire. I don't know about at Marquette when you were there, but at Eau Claire, if you majored in economics, they taught you about it. At 80% tax rates at the top, cutting taxes does in fact increase revenue. Mm-hmm. When top marginal tax rates only down around 25-30%, not so much. In fact, it probably decreases revenue. So that isn't what Reagan taught us.
Yes,
the circumstances are different. But these things will all get taken as an article of faith. And one of the things that some Republicans have taken as an article of faith, if we just went to a sales tax, then we don't need the IRS. Right. And again, it's not serious. They just want to be able to say, I got rid of the IRS. Why? I don't know.
They have to create a boogeyman. They have to create a villain. They have to say that I'm going to slay the dragon. It's just more theatrics. Theatrics were in play in the NFL playoffs last week. Our Green Bay Packers, owner of the Green Bay Packers, Trigvi Olsen, your Packers are done. However, as an owner, what are your feelings on your all-star quarterback? Reports yesterday that the Packers are willing to shop Aaron Rodgers around to other teams. Is somebody going to take him? Is Jordan Love going to be the starting quarterback this fall?
You know, I sure hope so. But I'm not a very powerful NFL owner because clearly the guys who gave Aaron Rodgers $100 million of our money, as I said once before on this show, I think it's time for all of us NFL owners to band together and start asking why did the guy on top decide to do that? Because that's in essence what they did him. He's getting $100 million. They're going to end up trading him and he'll have walked away with $100 million of the Packers money. Pretty good deal.
The agent, my gosh.
I know, he really took him to the cleaners. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, I thought the NFL playoffs, like, you know, as somebody who likes football, fan of football, the weekend when you got eight games is great. Four games is great because you got the eight best teams. And mm-hmm. there were some really, really good games. What stuck out at me is it's nice to see Mike McCarthy.
Right.
You know, he's like a song by The Who, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Sort of the same with McCarthy, right? He doesn't change. It's the same thing.
Jerry Jones essentially let their Twitter handle go on Dak Prescott. I mean, they basically just threw Dak Prescott under the bus and said it's his fault.
But you know what? I don't think he's very good.
Dak Prescott?
Dak Prescott. If he wasn't the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, he wouldn't get talked about the way he gets talked.
Well, that's what the kind of people were saying. No, he's a good quarterback, but he's not a great quarterback, and he couldn't even be good that night. I mean, you got beat by a rookie. You got beat by, quote-unquote, Mr. Irrelevant, Purdy, who was the last guy drafted in the last draft. Right. I think obviously he's a much better quarterback than anybody assumed. But, I mean, the guy wasn't like Brett Favre out there. I mean, Purdy's fine. But Dak Prescott and the Cowboys should have been able to win that game.
Yes. I mean, here's the thing. Like, with the teams that are left, to me, you know, this is just me personally, but, like, I'm all about Cincinnati winning it because Cincinnati kind of deserves it. Yeah. Like, you know, Burrow kind of reminds me a little bit of Brett Favre back in the day.
Yep.
And, you know, I kind of think, you know, the Rodgers thing. Am I sad that Rodgers is moving on? He's just gotten old. And it's the end of an era and whatever else. But I have to say, there's a part of me that thinks all these kids, including my own, who are Packer fans, like they deserve a little bit of Anthony Dillwig and Mike Tomczak. Blair Keel and David Whitehurst. Right? Like,
a little bit of pain.
You're spoiled.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, unless people are your age or my age, they just don't remember. They don't remember.
I remember when I was at Eau Claire, we were joking about Krylo being on TV, which is one of the things I remember. But beyond Krylo on WEAU, what I also remember is we would get up on Sunday mornings and be like, hey, should we go to the Packer game? And we'd drive over and inevitably you could find somebody
really?
To get tickets.
That's amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
Just walk into Lambeau. No big deal at all.
Yeah, sure. 87, 88, they were terrible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were atrocious. Chris Jackie.
So we might get that back.
Chris Jackie was the star of the team, the kicker.
He was. He follows me on Twitter.
Does he really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Uh-huh. That's awesome.
I think that's a Lincoln Project thing, but I don't know. I don't know whether he likes us or doesn't like us. That's a weird thing about like the whole LP experience has been. You know, they retweet your tweets and they have like 3 million, and then you get some famous people who follow you.
That's fabulous.
Sort of like, okay.
Trivia Olson from the Lincoln Project. Thanks so much. We appreciate you. We'll see you next Wednesday, my friend. Have a great week.
See you next Wednesday.
All right,
be good.
Thank you.
Well.
Stay with us more next hour on the Tom Allball Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you.